This is How to Save Humanity in 17 Goals, a podcast brought to you by Nature Careers in partnership with Nature Water. I'm Fabio Polizzi, Chief Editor at Nature Water. Welcome again to the series where we meet the scientists working towards the Sustainable Development Goals agreed by the United Nations and world leaders in 2015. For almost a decade, in a huge global effort, thousands of researchers have been using those targets to tackle the biggest problems that the planet faces today. In episode 9, we look at Sustainable Development Goal number 9, infrastructure, industrialization, and innovation, and meet an electrical engineer who sees efficient energy provision as central to a country meeting these aims.
I am Sinan Kufolo. I am working as a senior policy manager at the UK Office of Gas and Electricity Markets, Ofgem. Previously, I worked at Oxford, Cambridge, University College London, Aalto University in Finland on various energy economics and policy-related subjects. I'd like to clarify that the perspectives I express are my own as a researcher and do not necessarily represent or reflect the official or unofficial stances or views of Ofgem or the UK civil service. Goal number 9 is about building a resilient infrastructure and promoting sustainable industrialization and fostering innovation. So it has kind of three pillars: infrastructure, industrialization, and innovation. For the infrastructure in SDG number 9, the three main themes are to provide transportation, information and communication infrastructures. So these are the enablers for a sustainable development in industrialization and innovation. You know, without transport, without information, and without communication, we can't enable economic activity, industry, and innovation. So these are the main pillars picked up by the SDG number 9. I'm originally from Turkey. When I was a little child, Isaac Newton was my hero. That is why I was quite interested in physics. That was my favorite topic in the school. And when I started university in Ankara, in the Middle East Technical University, I wanted to study electrical engineering, just to continue all these, you know, Faraday's works, Maxwell's work. You know, I started being more and more interested in this electricity and energy fields. At the age of, 14, I gave a seminar on the importance and future of nuclear energy to the city representatives, my city in Turkey. So I was quite interested and keen on energy-related subjects. That's why I studied electrical engineering in Turkey. Then I wanted to do research and get into academia. That is why I moved to Finland to do my master's and PhD, again, in electrical engineering. But when I finished my PhD, I said, okay, this is a time for a bigger challenge to see, you know, to be exposed to the outer world, because Finland is more of a reserved place, you know, well, it's a happy country, yeah. Everyone, let's say in my university, Aalto University, we were all electrical engineers. Imagine a corridor. There are 40 people, they are all electrical engineers, and they look at the world from the same perspective, from the same window. So I wanted to change that, to expose myself for differences and different, you know, problems, people's backgrounds. That's why I moved to UK, and in Cambridge I found exactly that sort of environment. I, for example, from this School of Electrical Engineering, I moved to business school in Cambridge. So in there I worked with business people, finance people, people from sciences, humanities backgrounds, any backgrounds. And I started working with companies, industry, the public authorities, the companies from all around the world, and getting questions from them. You know, a company approaches you, says that, okay, we have this problem, can you do a research for us? I say, okay, yeah, we can do this, and we need these skills and experiences. They fund us. We go around our network, find the necessary skills, all together, a truly interdisciplinary research. We come up with answers. And when we publish our answers, in a short time period, we can see the real impact in the world. and that is what motivates me the most, to see the impact what I do, what I publish in the end. After that, I experienced the same thing in Oxford. Now, with the World Bank in EBRD, now I'm with Ofgem, the civil service. We do regulations and policy making, and everything we do, whatever we change, immediately the next day, there's a kind of impact in the orders of hundreds of millions, even billions of pounds. So this is quite, you know, tempting and motivating. And energy is the enabler of everything. The biggest infrastructure challenge, I think, well, as a power engineer, I can say the access to electricity, the power network, because power network, in my opinion, is the biggest engineering achievement of humankind to this date, because it enables other sectors and other economies to continue. And 5-7 years ago in Cambridge, we published a paper on the future of power distribution in the world and investigated, you know, what parts of the world has access to continuous power, what kind of networks they have. So around 1 billion people in the world right now lack continuous power access. And the concentration of these people are mainly in the global south. So there's an equality problem as well as technical problems of accessing electricity. So in my opinion, this is the biggest challenge, to provide electricity to everyone so that they will have an economy, they can create jobs and businesses, and they can sustain their modern social lives. Well, in addition to electric power, I can say access to clean water and sanitation is another infrastructure problem, because it is necessary to, as I said, sustain daily lives of, you know, dignified human beings. And again, this concentration of lacking access to clean water and sanitation is almost geographically the same with the lack of access to power. So these two are going, you know, side by side, I think, in terms of challenges. So solving one will naturally solve the other, I guess, if the necessary actions are taken. As SDG number 9 reminds me of transportation, it says information and telecommunications. Well, transportation-wise, I think the world is at okay-ish levels, so we can connect and travel to even the remotest areas in the world. It is fine, I think. Information, well, it comes to telecommunications and internet. Yes, we should just distribute the internet to all regions in the world. Some companies, you know, are doing this, some widespread big projects that promising that anyone on earth can access the internet. I hope that will work out. In terms of telecommunications, 2G network is almost everywhere on earth, but the adoption of 4G is lower and 5G is much lower. I'm sure those will increase in time as well as we achieve 2G. So, you know, information and telecommunications are okay-ish in terms of, well, when you compare with other problems in the infrastructure. When we talk about infrastructure, everyone thinks of investments, what will happen in the future, what we should do more to add on top of the existing one. But people tend to miss the thing that the existing infrastructure is aging as well. For example, in the energy network, the usual lifetime of, you know, equipment is around like 50, 60 years, if we are lucky, 70, depending on the quality of the manufacturing. So replacing the existing infrastructure, the aging infrastructure, is another big challenge. I remember back in the day, we went to a factory in Turkey. I was in the university there, and they wanted to change the electricity infrastructure to a new one, to a smarter one, you know, smart grid, smart energy systems. Yeah, popular ones, let's do that. So that was the year 2010. We went to that factory and I saw that the equipment were installed back in 1920s. They were German made, still working after 90 years, you see, but they had to be replaced maybe after 60 years. So they made it to 90 years. So these are huge costs, you see. In the developed world, well, the infrastructure is aging and it needs to be replaced. This is the biggest challenge. And the industry, it's transforming into a, you know, more digitalized, more green industries, more sustainable. Whereas in the developing countries, they still lack businesses, infrastructure. So basic infrastructure should go there first. I remember back in the day, we had a chat with a retired senior officer of one of the biggest oil companies in the world. I asked him a question, said that, you know, he gave us a speech about sustainability. Imagine an oil company former CEO talking about sustainability. That's a bit ironic. I said, okay, you say we're going to create a sustainable world in the future. And I said, in that sustainable world, there is no place for you, you know, oil companies. What are you going to do in terms of business? And he laughed a bit and said, I understand your enthusiasm, young man, but about a billion people lack energy right now in the world. And we are the first ones, the oil and gas companies, to reach these people before the electricity goes to them. So, you know, the industrialization, the needs, they change rapidly or widely between geographies. I think when we talk about the challenges, the solutions, we should address what we are talking about, where we are talking about. So the solution for this industrialization challenge, the practical and sensible solution would to provide decentralized and smart systems to the developing countries and least developed countries. For example, these solar systems, you know, solar PV systems, together with energy storage assets and clean water and sanitation assets, they could be deployed so that these regions will have the sufficient amount of basic infrastructure to run their daily, you know, errands. And this self-sufficient mini and micro infrastructure could be a solution in these underdeveloped regions, as long as financing mechanisms exist and provided to these regions. That's another problem, you know, financing mechanisms. For the developed world, the challenge is digitalization and aging infrastructure. So in one hand, we're going to incorporate more digital solutions. In the other, we're going to green it by decarbonizing it. In the meantime, of course, we will replace the aging infrastructure with the new ones. We had this kind of a trend maybe 20 years ago saying that, okay, let's decentralize everything, our energy systems. Why not go for microgrids, mini-grids, self-sustaining cities, self-sustaining university campuses? Everything should be self-sufficient. You know, self-sufficient homes, these ideas emerged everywhere in the world. So we wanted to decentralize these power systems, for example. But after 20 years, two decades, when we see now that we are creating more bigger, gigantic, centralized entities rather than decentralization. For example, it happened in the UK. 20 years ago, we were talking about mini-grids, micro-grids. Right now, we are creating this future energy system, future system operator. So it's going to be bigger, heavier in terms of physics, and more, you know, authorities and technical capabilities will be concentrated on the centralized entity. So everything is going for centralized entities. So that's a kind of a big irony in the developed world, I think, that should be mentioned here. There are various innovation challenges. First, we can mention of this research and development expenditure. Again, there's this inequality in the developed world. The, you know, a higher percentage of GDP is being spent for research and development, whereas in developing countries it's almost half of that, or maybe lower than half of that. Similarly, the number of researchers and academic activities in the developed world is much, much, much higher than the developing countries. So that means that the gap in between is going to get larger, bigger when time passes. So when we, you know, announced this SDGs back in 2015, the main idea was to support, you know, these developing countries so that there'll be more research and development innovation activities, so that the gap would be smaller. But the numbers tell us exactly different, the opposite way. So more research and development activities are concentrated in the developing world, less in the developed world, less in the developing world. The other thing in innovation, I think we should mention something really, really important here, is the viability of innovation. Because the countries are, you know, funding their research work, projects, RD projects and everything. What I witnessed in my professional career, I've been quite active in Brussels back in the day, attending, you know, European Commission's meetings about funding announcements, all these, you know, Horizon projects, etc. In many chats, I realized that they don't run proper return on investment analysis, cost benefit analysis. So in the developed world, I can say that the biggest challenge with innovation is that people tend to use these buzzwords. What are these buzzwords? Green, sustainable, holistic approach, inclusive, circular economy. So as long as you bombard your research proposal or, you know, innovation proposal with these words, you can easily sell it to people, to the funding authorities. And those authorities don't measure the impact after that. Imagine you propose a research project of 5 years and you're funded, let's say, 100 million euros. And after 5 years, no one is asking how much of value you created. So how much of this money returned back to the society, returned back to the economies? And I can give you two solid examples about this innovation challenge. The first one could be blockchain. 5 years ago, it was the biggest hype in the world, especially in the energy world. Everyone said, oh, it's going to decarbonize the whole world. We saved. Blockchain is the hero. And many countries, primarily Germany, invested huge amount of money in this sphere, funded projects, companies, startups. But after 5 years, now we can see that most of those companies failed. They perished from the business world. They couldn't create any real value. They couldn't create revenue streams. And what happened to those fundings? They're just gone, you see? And right now, the similar thing is happening with hydrogen. Similar, big hype. It's going to decarbonize everything. We're going to achieve net zero through hydrogen. And billions of euros are being spent everywhere in North America, in Europe, even in Britain. But no one is actually, you know, asking the question how much of this money is going to return back to the economies or the societies as real value. So I think in terms of innovation, when we talk about innovation, we should really highlight and underscore the term viability. The SDGs are not solid or binding targets. Rather, these are an accumulation of numerous recommendations and roadmaps. And so we don't have to achieve any solid targets by 2030. They're not binding or legally binding. So these are recommendations. But when we ask the questions, will we achieve SDG number 9 by 2030? The answer is yes and no, both. Because some parts of the world, you know, we already talked about the inequalities, you know, the geographical differences, they're going to achieve it. Maybe some parts have already achieved these, you know, SDG number 9 targets, sub-targets. There are various sub-targets in there. But some other parts of the world, maybe they will never achieve it. What I can say from my kind of professional experience, the ship has already set sail, these SDG ships, in particular this SDG number 9. Yep, it's traveling now, and it has a direction, an ultimate kind of target, it's going there. But the main question is, who is traveling in the first class and who is traveling below the deck, below the engines, below the sea level? So some people are traveling first class, some people are just below the, you know, engine rooms. So that is the problem, because after all, I'm an engineer and I believe in science and engineering, and I really, really believe in the potential in mankind. I definitely think that we are going to achieve these climate goals, the sustainable development goals, one way or another, maybe in 2030, maybe in 2050, but eventually we will achieve these. But it's not going to be an equal journey for everybody.
Thanks for listening to this series, How to Save Humanity in 17 Goals. Join us again next time when we look at Sustainable Development Goal number 10, to reduce inequality in and among countries. See you then.